Fifth Canto, Chapter 13, Rahuguna converses with Jadbara, text number 8. Chalam kvachit katanga sarkarangri. Chalam kvachit katanga sarkarangri. Nagaru rukshur vimana ivaste. Pade pade bhyantara vani nardita. Krutumbika krujyati vajanaya. Chalam kvachit katanka sargarangir. Nagaru rukshu vimana ivaste. Pade pade bhyantara vani nardita. Kautumbika krujyati vajanaya. Chalam kvachit kantaka sargarangir. Nagaru rukshu vimana ivaste. Pade pade bhyantara vani nardita. Kautumbika krujyati vajanaya. Nagaru rukshu vimana ivaste. Pade pade bhyantara vani nardita. Kautumbika krujyati vajanaya. Ladies. Chalan, wandering, kvachit, sometimes, kantaka sharkara, pierced by thorns and small stones, angri, whose feet, naga, the hills, aruruksu, one desiring to climb. Vimana, disappointed. Eva, like. Aste, becomes. Pade pade. Step by step. Abhyantara. Within the abdomen. Varnina. By the strong fire of appetite. Ardita. Being fatigued and aggrieved. Kautumbikaha. A person living with his family members. Krujyate. Becomes angry. Vai. Certainly. Janaya. At the family members. Translation. Sometimes the merchant in the forest wants to climb the hills and mountains, but due to insufficient footwear, his feet are pricked by small stone fragments and by thorns on the mountain. Being pricked by them, he becomes very much aggrieved. Sometimes a person who is very much attached to his family becomes overwhelmed with hunger, and due to his miserable condition, he becomes furious with his family members. Purport. The ambitious conditioned soul wants to be very happy in this material world with his family, but he's compared to a traveler in the forest who desires to climb a hill full of thorns and small stones. As stated in the previous verse, the happiness derived from society, friendship, and love is like a drop of water in the scorching heat of the desert. One may want to become very great and powerful in society, but this is like attempting to climb a hill full of thorns. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur compares one's family to high mountains. Becoming happy in their association is like a hungry man's endeavoring to climb a mountain full of thorns. Almost 99% of the population is unhappy in family life, despite all the attempts being made to satisfy the family members. In the Western countries, due to the dissatisfaction of the family members, there's actually no family life. There are many cases of divorce, and out of dissatisfaction, the children leave the protection of their parents. Especially in this age of Kali, family life is being reduced. Everyone is becoming self-centered because that is the law of nature. Even if one has sufficient money to maintain a family, the situation is such that no one's happy in family life. Consequently, according to the Varnashram system institution, according to the Varnashram institution, one has to retire from family life in middle age. Pancha chordam vanam vrajat. One should voluntarily retire from family life at the age of 50 and go to Vrindavan or a forest. This is recommended by Srila Prahlad Maharaj, Bhagavatam 7.5.5. Tat sarumanya suravaya denam sada samudvignam diyam satgrahat hidvatma padam griyamandu kupam vanam gato yaddarim asrayeta. There is no benefit in transferring from one forest to another. One must go to the Vrindavan forest and take shelter of Govinda. That will make one happy. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is therefore constructing a Krishna Balaram temple to invite its members as well as outsiders to come and live peacefully in a spiritual atmosphere. That will help one become elevated to the transcendental world and return home back to Godhead. Another sentence in this verse is very significant. Kutumbika krujati vajanana janaya. When one's mind is disturbed in so many ways, he satisfies himself by becoming angry with his poor wife and children. The wife and children are naturally dependent on the father. But the father, being unable to maintain the family properly, becomes mentally distressed and therefore chastises the family members unnecessarily. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.2.9, Achinadara dravina yasyanti girikaranam, being disgusted with family life, one separates from the family by divorce or some other means. If one has to separate, why not separate willingly? Systematic separation is better than forced separation. Forced separation cannot make anyone happy, but by mutual consent or by the Vedic arrangement, one must separate from his family affairs at a certain age and fully depend on Krishna. This makes one's life successful. Om Vajnana Timrandasya Gyananmana Salakaya Chakshuram Militanyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavastam Stapitanyena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Darati Swaparantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasani Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here in the analogy of climbing the mountain over a path with full of thorns and sharp rocks, we are finding the material situation, or what is called prakriti stani kursati, the struggle for material existence. Sometimes in the course of just that struggle for survival, one has to go through various type of agitation. And then what happens is that one is expressing this in family life. So where the whole idea began with romance and fairy tale, and now will be happily ever after, it actually winds up with two people getting agitated in the situation of their life, and expressing that in their relationship. In other words, the partner just becomes someone to relieve our stress, and we'll just dump all our agitation on the partner. So that's very common, and there are marriages which lead to divorce where the cause of the divorce is mental cruelty. And that mental cruelty is exactly that someone is agitated for some reason and actually marries to have a sparring partner, someone to mentally beat up regularly, someone to relieve stress. Those kind of dynamics may be there in relationships more than we are aware of. And therefore, we have to rise above these lower modes of nature. We have to, therefore, first of all, accept that in marriage, both partners are a unit. In Bhagavatam, in the chapter of ideal family life, in the seventh canto, there's a description how both partners should see each other as the other half of one unit. That's different than I'm married and this person is supposed to make me happy. And what's wrong with this person? Something is wrong. This person is not making me happy. That's wrong. Cooperate. Get it together. You're supposed to make me happy. That's what we were getting married for. No, it's a partnership where both partners are meant to look at each other's happiness and each other's benefit. So both are meant to have a spirit of sacrifice and to consider the needs of the other person as important as one's own needs. Not that you are here to fulfill my needs. You are my wife, or you are my husband, and you must serve my purposes. So marriages where one is interested in one's own self-interest and trying to fulfill that to a partner are very difficult marriages, and such marriages are at great risk. So it takes quite an adjustment, because we are not used to think of the need and the interest of more than ourselves. For so long, we've been alone, and we've been actually the center of the universe, and what we need is very important. That's the priority. And suddenly to say the needs of two, or the needs of an entire family, are actually our priority, that is maturity. And that maturity is required. Oftentimes, at the beginning, we don't have that kind of maturity. Because one can enter into the Grihastha Ashram from different modes of nature. One can enter into the Grihastha Ashram from the mode of ignorance, that I've been attracted to all kinds of degraded type of sexuality, for a longer period of time now, and therefore I think I should get married. Well, then the basis is one coming from the mode of ignorance, then marriage will be difficult. Or it's just love, 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 those beautiful starry eyes, or those wonderful muscles in the right places are just very attractive to me, then the mode of passion is very predominant. So the mode of passion will bring us suffering. So such marriages arising from the lower modes of nature or from the higher modes of nature or from the mode of passion are bringing us suffering. Therefore, actually, marriage between devotees should be engaged in from the mode of goodness. That means one should properly understand and hear what is the task we are undertaking, and it should be done in a spirit of sacrifice. If someone comes and has major problems with the regulative principles and says, I need to get married, then I'm worried about that, because I wouldn't really want to let someone like that loose on someone else. That's the situation, because marriage is not at all a magic fix for problems with the regulative principles, or which, generally speaking, arise from spiritual neglect. If such a person gets married, probably they're going to make someone else quite miserable. There's a good chance. So that's not very good. Better, we are preparing for marriage. Therefore, the kind of spirit, I need to get married now, I can't wait, it has to happen now, bad news. That's not really the right attitude. If it's that bad, then we're looking not at someone who has a need to be married, we're looking at someone who has a spiritual problem. We're looking at someone who is not sufficiently absorbed in Krishna conscious activities, who maybe due to previous karma has a special problem, and that is what's coming out. So that's not the end of the world. After all, we all appeared in this age of Kali, and probably all of us have some bad karma. Most likely, nobody really has very good karma. And even if some do have, in general, good karma, then along with it, we may expect that there is something that's not so good after all. Therefore, affliction of the mode of ignorance and passion may be expected in devotees. But therefore, it is good if at least for some period we undergo some purification. And before getting married, it is necessary that there is some purification, some preparation, that one actually approaches the marriage in the mode of goodness, where one is understanding that the basis of the marriage is spiritual life, and the basis is to remain nicely fixed in devotional service. And then additionally, there are desires for enjoyment, and that is fine, as I mentioned a few days ago. There is no difficulty with that as long as one is not engaging in sinful activity. Sinful activity may also be illicit sex within marriage. Anything that is not dana viruda buddhisu kamusmi bharatera sabha also enters into the realm of sinful activity. So devotees are careful to shelter themselves from sinful activity. So sometimes there are products that are not directly sinful, but they are products of a sinful society. Like, for example, certain types of music. It's not directly terribly sinful music, but it is also not devotional music. And it's kind of music that, it's in the better modes. It's not completely in the lower modes. So that's all right. No, it's not all right, because that creates attachments. That maintains material attachments. And such material attachments then will push. In that way, we are remaining attached to enjoying the senses. And then the pushing of the senses will again become stronger. And then it will not be easy to satisfy the senses within the boundaries of Krishna conscious culture. Whatever Krishna conscious culture allows, there are obviously boundaries. And if there's not a life of minimizing the needs of the senses, but if there's a life of like feeding the senses and just going a little over the borders, not too much, but then obviously the result is that not immediately the activities are sinful, but the desires of the senses become strengthened, and then it becomes more and more difficult to say no to sinful temptations. See, so there is such a thing as the stepping stone concept, where one step leads to another, and another, and another. So in this way, the Grihastha ashram is not so much different from any of the other ashrams. It's still an ashram where one's main focus should be the cultivation of spiritual activity. Therefore, I would say sense gratification, the so-called license for sense gratification, is really not like, cannot be the focus in the Grihastha ashram. If that is the focus, then one remains in the mode of passion. Then one's spirit is, we want to enjoy this ashram. Therefore, the main spirit should be rather a spirit of camaraderie. Camaraderie in the Grihastha ashram, or being together, sharing, right? Not facing life alone, but sharing the various duties, the various supports that one gets from each other. That is actually a much more important element in the ashram. To be real friends. Friends in the true sense, friends that are helping each other, friends that are willing to think together about what is going on. In this way, the Grihastha ashram is offering a much more important and greater element than trying to enjoy together. When we get too much into this enjoying spirit, then the shoe of spiritual life becomes very tight. It becomes a shoe that is tight on the foot, and how long can one walk on it? Every once in a while, yes, boy, I have to take them off. I need to relax a little bit. It's just too much stress, all these spiritual duties. It's just, we have to be more natural. That risk is there. Together finding a way of life and being prepared to sacrifice within that. Obviously, you know, one wants to live in Italy and the other one wants to live in Sweden. I mean, what's it going to be? Right? These kind of dilemmas do occur, you know. It has to be looked at, like really, whose need is the greatest. And it cannot always be one who has the greatest need, right? And one always in need and another one always providing. Then you get an early Vanaprastha in situations like that. Yeah? One has to think of that, you know. Those who have so many needs in the marriage, right? I mean, sometimes you, as a spiritual master, you begin to act in a parental role and you get involved, although you're a sannyasi, in bringing people together, and then, okay, then begins the discussion, and on the table come the needs, and you go like, and I think, tone down, you know, if you put so many needs on the table, it's never going to come to a marriage in the first place, you know. Just tone down, don't be so demanding, just understand, it's not so easy to find someone, it's not so easy to keep someone, you know. And just the fact that, you know, some rings have been exchanged and some vows, you know, and even some legal papers may have been signed. Anyway, you know, don't take it for granted at all, right? Don't think, I have the cat in the bag. That is a big mistake, you know, when you think, now I have the cat in the bag, you know, the truth of the matter is the cat may find ways to get out of there very quickly. So, therefore, one must invest in the marriage to make it work, and both must do so. So both must satisfy. So one cannot be always in need. I need so much. Grow up. Stop needing. Right? All this needing is just childish. You know, children crying. Right? Stop this crying. Stop this needing. Right? Except life is not going to give you all that you need. It doesn't exist. Right? You don't get always all you need. You know. It's too hot, too cold, we're too poor, I don't like the car, I don't like the house, you know. The house is okay, but the neighbors are bad, right? Radhika Raman made a nice point, there's always something wrong. You know, I knew someone who for years worked for the dream house, a devotee, and he got the dream house, and then, within a month, the Hell's Angels moved in next door. Serious. Yeah. If you would write a script for a movie, right, you couldn't come up with something like that, you know. You wouldn't think of it. And I used to think that movies were more far out than real life, but now I know. Real life is much more far out than any movie. Right? The things that happen in real life are inconceivable. The Hell's Angels, of all people, moving next door, have their headquarters. Well, you know, they had to move. Yeah? They had to move. So, in this way, life is... is not under our control. Then I saw a movie on an airplane. You see lots of movies on an airplane. This one was interesting for a change. And it started about romance. There's a couple, and there was romance, and everything was really like rosy and wonderful. And, you know, the camera zooms in, you know, and they speak words of love, and they both look really, you know, she looks beautiful, he is always funny and entertaining, and everything is really like, you know, wonderful. And then romance is over, and then she's expecting, and she wears these big dresses, you know, and she doesn't look as beautiful as she did before. And, you know, you see, and he has to work, and you already see, like, on his face some sort of, like, ooh, you know. And then the child is born, and then what happens is the camera goes down, and the camera is suddenly on child level, right? And everything, it's very interesting because it creates an effect in the movie where really it's very clear the child has become everything now. It's the child, right? And you see toys, you know, and then when you're looking up at people, you're looking up from down, way up to the adults, and it very much creates the shift, you know, the shift of the camera very much creates the shift of the focus from romance. It has become children, child is everything now. That is the reality. It's family life that we should understand. And in the mode of goodness, we understand that this is what we are doing. We're going to have a family, and one has to think like that. It's not like I'm going to have, you know, a prince and a princess and, you know, and all that. No, it's not at all like that. That's not the actual aim. So, the mode of goodness means that we enter in a spirit of sacrifice, that we enter in a spirit of renunciation. Not renunciation in the sense from I'm going to, you know, give up the world and live in a cave and, you know what I mean, and I'll be with this, you know, okay, take the male role for a sec because it's easier for me to play it. But, you know, I'll marry this woman, but of course, you know, like, I'll be very renounced, yes. As I'm entering into this ashram, I'll have the minimum of interaction with her. I'll rarely talk with her, I'll hardly look at her, you know, this, that, but I guess I'll marry her, you know, like, kind of the artificially renounced grihastha, right, who never ever, you know, will put a hand on the radioactive shoulder of his good wife when she needs a moment of comfort, you know. I mean, it's like, how can I, you know, I mean, woman, you know, like, no, never a gesture of affection, cold, impersonal, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, very rigidly, afraid to fall down in the material world. So when I said that we should enter the Grihastha Ashram in a spirit of renunciation, I didn't mean that one. I meant that we should be ready to minimize our needs. Because if you really, everyone has so many needs, and this is the problem in relationships when people have too many needs. Eh? That just creates so much stress, so much, very difficult, you know. And so we should just minimize our needs and bring it down to real needs, right? The real, unavoidable ones. They are there. All right, that is there. Yeah. Maybe something that's very strong in our nature, like, you know, if you say Kadambakanan Swami, no more music, you know, I mean, it doesn't work, right? It's going to burst out somehow or other. It's going to be there. In fact, I went through this that in 1995 when I was injured, my doctor told me no more kirtan. You know, that's the first thing he told me. No kirtan, right? I looked at him, you know, are you a devotee or a demon? And decided, you know, I don't care, even if I die, right? Let me die, I'll have kirtan. I'd rather die and have kirtan than live and have no kirtan. That was the choice, you know. And yeah. So there are sometimes things that are very strong in our nature.
Right.
They need to be there. Or we have physical needs. That needs to be there. And it's funny how in a marriage you can have big fights over whether the window is open at night or closed. You know what I'm saying? And that's a big thing, right? A big thing. In my previous, a few ashrams back, right? When I was in the Grihastha ashram, there was a little cupboard, right? And this cupboard, somehow or other, was by my good wife designated for my clothes, right? And there were little doors on that cupboard, right? Now, you know, we lived in Vrindavan, where the Mangal Aarti starts at 4:10, which is early, you know, quite early, right? So I was good at fast showers, you know, extremely fast, right? I mean, 17 minutes on the dot, you know, from getting up, run to the bathroom and back, tilak and dhotis and everything, and out the door, off to the temple. In 3 minutes, I could be there. So in 20 minutes, I could do the whole thing. Bang. Yeah. And then there is this little cupboard with doors, you know, useless doors. What are these doors for, you know? They just hold you up, right? So open the doors, grab my clothes, and then, you know, jump in the clothes and jump out the door. And then she goes like, why are you never closing the doors? You're never closing these doors, you know? And I go like, you know, that's ridiculous, you know? I mean, I have no time for such things, you know? Leave me alone, you know? I'm busy. I'm managing the temple the whole day. I'm coming home late at night, you know? I need some sleep, okay? And so on. And like, you know, then we had so many fights over these doors, right? No, serious. Many fights actually started over these doors. And one day, and I really started to think, we have a marriage problem. And then one day I realized, actually we don't have a problem. We don't have a marriage problem. We have just that stupid little cupboard. That thing has to go. And if just that thing goes, right, then, you know, so many things will improve. And it did, you know. Yeah. So it's funny how in a relationship, serious, you know, something dumb like a little cupboard with doors can just be the cause of like so much stress. Just like the stones on the path here of the mountain, you know. These insignificant things can become big things. So one has to be ready to adjust. One has to be ready. That is the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness is a spirit of sacrifice. And therefore we first have to cultivate that spirit of sacrifice. Therefore there is no rush to enter into the Grihastha ashram. Take some time. Take some time to prepare and then enter with maturity, with that spirit of sacrifice. Then it will work much better. Okay, I'm going to stop. Any question or comments? They made such music in Prabhupada's time. There was a record called Change of Heart, and they played it for Prabhupada and asked him if it was all right. And Prabhupada said, yes, it's okay. So he gave a license for devotees to make such kind of music. Generally speaking, such kind of music is made by the musicians to create bridges to people in the material world, right? And there's a huge range of that kind of music, you know, music that has been made for people in the material world. Oftentimes, we see that people in the material world are not very interested in that kind of music, but devotees love it. You know? They love it. Yeah? So, what can you say, you know, like... It depends which ashram you're in. I wouldn't recommend it for the brahmacharya ashram, who are meant to really minimize their material desires and who are ready to confront these material desires head on, you know. Okay, we're not going to invest in it. That's the brahmacharya ashram. So it's not really in the brahmacharya. In the grihastha ashram, you have a whole collection of so many CDs and this and that. You have a couple of those in there, and no problem, you know. I wouldn't play them all day. I would, you know, put up some Prabhupada every once in a while and something straight Maha Mantra. You know, that's nice. We don't need to be fanatic about such things. But brahmacharis, they have to be strict. And that's the time. See, a brahmachari is not so renounced. A brahmachari is one who is full of material desires. But a brahmachari is going to establish... A brahmachari is not mainly... His main agenda is not like, I'm going to kill all my material desires. Good luck, you know. That's probably not going to work. Right? The material desires are not so easily killed. Yeah? The main agenda of a brahmacharya is I'm going to put some good spiritual habits in place. And I hope that these good spiritual habits will be the foundation of what will carry me forward in the future of dealing with material desires, my mind, my senses, and so on. And therefore, at least for the time being, I'm going to sacrifice sense gratification and I'm going to build up some very strong spiritual habits. Therefore, for a brahmachari, there is no scope for like, you know, bending the rules a little bit. No way. Strictness is required because we need to build up the good strong habits. And then, if the brahmachari decides... I think I want to stay a brahmachari for longer. And he'll sing, I'll stay a brahmachari for 5 years. Then you have. Then if after 5 years he thinks, I'll extend it for another 5 years. And then if one has been a brahmachari for 10 years and think, maybe I can actually stay a brahmachari, then all these good habits will be reinforced and will help. If I ever a brahmachari decides to get married, then the good habits from the brahmachari days will also still help one in the grihastha ashram. So, therefore, whatever type of brahmachari one is, one that wants to stay a nice sticky brahmachari for life, or an upakurvana brahmachari who later wants to be married, now strictness is a prerequisite. Like that. The needs in marriage, yeah. Yes. Yes. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, like that. No, that's what I meant, actually. If I didn't come across like that, that's what I meant. And I meant, okay, step one is, you know, I say, minimize your needs, you know, don't be someone with so many... Step one is, you know, don't come with, this is my list and this is what I want. Take a step... Tone down, come off the high horse, and then look at real needs, right? Real genuine needs, and then discuss that and then figure it out together and then accommodate for that and make a plan accordingly. A marriage needs a plan, right? A plan that both can live with, both can agree with. A marriage without a plan, which is not based on such mutual discussion and where both are sort of agreeing, yes, this would be suitable for us. A marriage without such a plan is shaky. Such a marriage will have a lot of turbulence, right? Unexpected things coming up. So what you say is very important, such dialogue. For safety. Sure. Yeah. 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 There must be trust and so on. Yeah. Yeah, one must really become the well-wisher of the other person. Right? I mean, not just we're together like, okay, trying to be together as long as it goes well, you know? And if it doesn't go well, you know, then we're gonna, you know, have some counseling, and if that doesn't go well, then what can we do? You know, then maybe you're gonna talk to the lawyer. Not like that. No, one should be the well-wisher, and whatever comes up, say, okay, we're going to work through it. Some bad things are going to come up. And it's not that only the partner is going to be perfect. There's going to be some bad qualities are going to come up, and we're going to work through that together somehow or other. Yeah, and then by the age of 50, one sort of gets ready for a more retired type of life. And that's vanaprastha in the Vedic culture. Not divorce, but somewhat more distant and now more focused on spiritual life. So naturally, it's nice. So then vanaprastha is nice. Not something horrible. Something, oh my God, you know. How old are you? 49. But you've been 49 for the last 5 years. I'm going to stay 49. Mm. No more questions? Yes. I didn't say professional singers. I said music that is maybe more that brings in Western instruments and so on, you know. That's something else. Prabhupada authorized that, but still done by devotees. If we're going to listen to now there's so much kirtan outside, right? But yeah, if these singers are Mayavadis, then it's not the best, right? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't recommend that devotees have recordings of Mayavadi kirtan singers, right? I'm not going to mention names, but of Mayavadi kirtan singers and just... I looked at some of the big names in the kirtan world, and I saw one of the big singers, and I saw him doing the kirtan, and I saw this blonde girl on a tambourine sitting next to him. You know, and I thought, like, I don't know. It doesn't do it for me. I'd rather have the sincere, pure kirtan of a devotee who wants to glorify Krishna. Yeah. We have so much kirtan in our own world, so let's go for the devotees. Yeah. That's what we want. No need for some. I want something else. Come on, there's so much, you know. You can sort of go deep and meditative with Madhava. You know, if you want a rock, you can invite me. Or if you want something else, there's always, you know, some different variety of kirtan. We have enough. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sarpicha, yeah. Because the holy name is pure, but with it comes something. It's like, you know, if I give, it's you add something. So you're not, it's not that the holy name is contaminated, but you get the holy name plus some contamination. You get two things. So the holy name is there, yeah, but the person is also, you're developing some faith in that person. You're developing a relationship with the person. So you start listening to that person, yeah, you start to develop a relationship with him. You start to develop some appreciation for him, and then right behind is his life and his convictions and his Mayavad philosophy, or his sense gratification, his lack of principles. And in this way, contamination creeps in. So it's not the holy name itself that is contaminated. But if the holy name is chanted by a materialistic person, then the holy name is manifest to a lesser degree. Yeah? The holy name manifests its transcendental nature to a lesser or stronger degree according to who it is chanted by. Yeah? If the holy name is chanted by offenses, then Krishna more and more withdraws, yeah, from the name. Yeah? And so when these professional singers are chanting, then there's not much potency in the chanting itself. And B is we develop some attachment to them and some faith in them eventually. And that is dangerous. So therefore, no need. Even if some have a nice voice. Yeah. And lots of devotees with nice voices too. All right, I will leave it like this. I thank you very, very much. It was nice to rest here for 1 week. I really needed it. And I hope to see you again after some time in July for the Pandavasena retreat and all these things in the middle of the action. So it's wonderful to come to Radha Desh. It is a special community, I can tell you. I see so many places in the world, and this place actually has so many wonderful things to offer. Of course, when you live somewhere, then after a while the mind thinks the grass is greener on the other side, but I tell you, it's not that much greener. I was just on the other side of the world, and the grass is not any greener there than here. I think overall, Radha Desh is doing pretty good. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.